The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Newspapers today, unsurprisingly, every single paper, as far as I can see, with the exception of the Examiner, which goes with Oasis pictures, all of the rest of them showing pictures of a beaming Donald Trump, looking as happy as we have ever seen him in pictures, standing beside Vladimir Putin in Alaska. Now, there was something of an expectation that there might be tangible results from that summit. As of this morning, no tangible detail on what potential deal might get made, but the White House saying that great progress and that it had been a very useful meeting. And of course, now we hear only moments ago that Donald Trump had a phone call with the Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky and has invited him to Russia, and or rather has invited him to Washington, I should say, to brief him on that discussion with the Russian president, and also to see if it can be moved on towards being what Zelensky describes as the necessary trilateral meeting. With us is David Smith. He's Washington correspondent with The Guardian in Alaska, and he is in Alaska currently. David, good morning.
Morning.
David, can I ask, before we get to the details of the outcome of the meeting, can you talk to me a little bit about the optics and the visuals? Because these kind of things are very carefully stage managed. And from an outsider layperson's view, looking at some of the images and looking at the TV coverage, I would have thought Vladimir Putin would have regarded this as a great success.
Yes, I think that's right. It's worth remembering Donald Trump is a bit of an impresario and a show producer of his own presidency, if you like. And there's often spectacle accompanying that. And so we saw Trump and Putin step off their planes at exactly the same time and walk on this red carpet at an Air Force base where I was situated yesterday. And as Trump was waiting for Putin to join him, he applauded him, sort of burst into clapping, which was a little odd. And then they walked this red carpet. And then notably, Trump invited Putin to actually get in the presidential limousine known as the Beast, which they did. And you could see Putin laughing away in the back. Very rare privilege for an ally or an adversary to be riding in that vehicle. And then they pretty much disappeared, and we were stuck in a press tent on the airbase for a long time, a mix of American and international and Russian journalists. And then we had this this press conference where, again, in terms of the optics, Vladimir Putin was the first to speak, which is highly unusual. You would normally expect the host nation to do that. He also spoke longer than Donald Trump. They ended warmly with joking about Trump coming to Moscow, and then to the surprise of, you know, hundreds of journalists in that room who were shouting questions, they left the stage without answering any. And certainly a lot is being said by Trump's critics in America that you know, the optics really did favor Putin, and it looks like yeah, he was running the show, and Trump was very deferential to someone who's an indicted war criminal.
And someone who is an international pariah. I mean, his travel globally is grossly limited by various different sanctions and being persona non grata in many Western countries around the world. This was the kind of literal red carpet treatment we haven't seen for any of America's more traditional allies, never mind an adversary.
That's right. And what a startling contrast with the way Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine was treated when he went to Washington in February and sat in the Oval Office and was publicly berated and belittled by Donald Trump on that occasion. Conversely, yeah, this time it was a royal greeting for Putin. And as you touch on, I mean, there are dozens of countries in the world now who've signed up to the International Criminal Court. If Vladimir Putin set foot on their territory, those countries would be obliged to arrest him. And yet, here he was being feted and really almost appearing as an equal of the U.S. president, which is something he craves. It was extraordinary. And again, Trump's critics are fiercely attacking him for, you know, seeming to legitimize Vladimir Putin and bring him back from international isolation and put him back on the world stage.
Now, those, of course, who are the opposite of critical of Trump, his supporters are pointing to two things. One, they are saying that to see the Russian president standing in front of a banner that said pursuing peace is in and of itself a significant step forward, or at least a significant step towards peace, and that he has long made clear that his objective in this is to end the killing. And given what he has said subsequently, he may have made strides in that direction. Is there truth in any of that?
Well, it's certainly true there was a banner that said pursuing peace, so I guess that's something. But I think after 3.5 years of this, the Ukrainians and others really want Vladimir Putin to match any words or visuals with action. And there was still some attacking of Ukraine going on, even while this summit happened. Whether any substantial progress was made really remains very uncertain. Trump and Putin spoke for 3 hours, and then at this press conference, they told us very little about what had been discussed. Trump spoke in these generalities of saying great progress had been made, and they had agreed on numerous points, and there were still one or two that stood out that he thought could be resolved. But there were some ominous words from Vladimir Putin, who talked about how, talked about the root causes of the Ukraine crisis. And normally that is Putin speak for his own version of history, where he does not recognize Ukraine as an independent entity, and he has historic grievances. The fact he was still talking in those terms and that Trump was not pushing back suggests Putin has shifted very little here. And we certainly did not hear a discussion that a ceasefire was imminent or there had been any major breakthrough. I'm afraid it remains to be seen whether this meeting actually achieved anything.
Well, I know this gets you into slightly clairvoyance territory, but given that being the outcome of the meeting, what do you make of Zelensky's call with Trump and Zelensky now intending to fly to Washington for Monday?
Hard to interpret. I mean, if one's being optimistic, it's because Trump told him progress had been made, and Zelensky is now on board for an upcoming meeting with Putin. Trump had just talked about that as his goal. Maybe Trump himself will be there as well. Bringing those two leaders together and them thrashing out some sort of deal would certainly be progress, and the end would be in sight. But it's also very possible Zelensky is rushing to Washington as a damage limitation exercise, that despite the efforts of European leaders in the past few days, who really ran through at least five bullet points for Trump, do not get into the discussion of swapping territory and various other things. Maybe Trump was persuaded by Putin in some respects, and certainly in a TV interview after the meeting, Trump was saying that it's now up to Zelensky to get it done, as if somehow the ball is in his court. And so I think, either way, it's probably good that Zelensky has been granted this audience. He now gets his say. Again, all eyes will be on it to make sure that it's not a repeat of that February meeting in the Oval Office, where Zelensky is the victim who's getting bullied.
And lastly then, David, there's an interesting piece written by Andrew Neil in the Mail today talking about Europe's role in all of this, which summarises as essentially spectator, being ignored by all and sundry. Is there a role left for either the EU or any of the major European powers in these discussions?
Yeah, I think both in terms of the hard and soft power. Nowadays, Europe is the primary supporter of Ukraine in terms of funding and military aid. So by definition, it has a crucial role to play here. And we also saw that diplomacy in the last few days, where European leaders had this call with Trump. He said it was all very friendly and was great and so on. And I think some of them have figured out how to connect with Trump, which is not super sophisticated diplomacy. It basically involves being very sycophantic and pouring praise on Trump and saying he deserves to win the Nobel Peace Prize. And then he does tend to listen to them. That has achieved a bit more equilibrium. And I think that's why there's been, you know, some more positive meetings with Zelensky in recent months. The Europeans are getting through to an extent. And Trump at times has acknowledged that, you know, this is happening on Europe's doorstep. Of course, they have a crucial role to play here. So, yeah, I think Europe is not out of it yet.
David, thank you very much. And thanks again, given that it's such an unsociable hour where you are. That's David Smith, Washington correspondent with The Guardian in Alaska. And we're going to be getting a political reaction from Ukraine a little bit later in the program, as well as hearing from the former UK ambassador to Belarus about how the international community is perceiving both that summit and also the news that Zelensky is going to be heading to Washington on Monday. Brad is with us. He's former UK ambassador to Belarus and to North Korea. And John, as somebody who has spent a long time involved in international diplomacy, my understanding is that the little things matter, and that the order in which people speak, the level and the manner in which people are greeted, the decisions to do things like travel in the one limo together, they send signals. Your reading of the meeting yesterday between Trump and Putin, what signals were sent by both sides?
There are a lot of signals of the warm relationship between Trump and Putin. As you say, sitting together in the Beast, Trump's much-loved, heavily armoured limo. Without interpreters, without aides, Trump, of course, speaks no Russian, but Putin does speak conversational English, so they probably exchange a few words there. And Trump laid out the red carpet, literally, for Putin. A fly past of F-35s and a B-2 just to make Putin feel welcome. So the warm-up was intense. But you call this diplomacy, I suppose technically it was, but really this wasn't actually diplomacy. This was show business.
And in terms of the show business, there was an expectation that at the end there would be some form of coda, some form of big finale where something would get announced. That didn't happen, but we got told it was very successful nonetheless. What do you take that to mean?
I was at Singapore when Trump did the same with Kim Jong-un. And there, in fact, there was a sort of agreement, a fairly meaningless bit of paper, vague and that never got implemented in any case. This time round with Putin, we didn't even get to the bit of paper stage. I don't really think that Trump was looking for a deal. I think he was looking for the attention of the world, which sure enough he got. He wanted the world's television cameras on him as he alone. So without Zelensky, he wasn't going to share that limelight with anybody, shook Putin's hand. And sure enough, the two chummed it up. We know a little bit about what passed between them. Putin sucking up to Trump quite shamelessly, but still very far short of a deal. A success, says Trump? Of course Trump says a success. When did Trump ever say, I have failed?
Now, David Smith from The Guardian earlier on was comparing that meeting with the experience that Volodymyr Zelensky had when he went to the Oval Office and got monstered by both Trump and his vice president, J.D. Vance. Do you think that's what he's in for again on Monday? Because Trump is saying that if it all works out on Monday, there's going to be a meeting scheduled with Putin. So he's setting a high bar and putting on a lot of pressure already.
Yeah, no, I don't think we're going to see a repeat of the monstering, as you called it, of Zelensky on Monday. I think this is going to be a much more serious meeting. Trump has been partially humiliated. I mean, the fact that he walked out of a press conference after 3.5 minutes without answering questions is most un-Trumpian. He realizes that his attempt to shine on the world stage didn't work. I expect he will put some pressure on Zelensky, but he's also been talking to a lot of other people who will have been telling him that leaning on Zelensky isn't going to work. If he wants this Nobel Peace Prize, the only way he's going to get it is to force Putin to cede. And Putin right now is not going to cede in the face of mere words, probably not in the face of sanctions. The only thing, and I know that people very close to Trump are telling him this, the only thing that is going to make Putin give ground sufficiently that you might get a peace deal is for him to start losing on the battlefield, which means massive rearmament of Ukraine. Now, that won't go down well with Trump's MAGA base, but if he wants the Nobel Peace Prize, then that's probably what he's going to have to do.
John, thank you very much for your analysis. That's John Everard, former UK ambassador to Belarus and North Korea. Ina Sovsun is with us as well. She's an MP in Ukraine. Ina, Volodymyr Zelensky saying that Ukraine is open to constructive cooperation, very guarded reaction. What's your reaction to what you saw emerging from that meeting?
Well, truth be told, as a human being, I had hopes for a miracle, that something will change in the behavior of Putin and Trump, and they will actually find a way to end this war in between themselves. As a Ukrainian, as someone who has lived through 11 years of this war, 3.5 years of a full-scale invasion, I was very skeptical. And unfortunately, the skeptical part of me has won, because unfortunately, what we have seen is basically nothing. We have seen that Putin gets the red carpet without doing anything, without changing a single thing in his behavior. There were some rumors reported by The Economist that one of the pieces of the deal that was preliminary being made between Trump and Putin is the air ceasefire. Well, during this night, the Russians have launched one ballistic missile and 85 drones into Ukrainian territory. And that doesn't sound like an air ceasefire to me at all. So we are seeing lots of showmanship, but we are not really seeing a lot of decisions that can actually change how we are living through this terrifying war.
When you look at that showmanship from a Ukrainian perspective, this is a man who is responsible for, I think it's fair to say that the Ukrainians would perceive that he is responsible for having stolen Ukrainian children, that he's responsible for having leveled Ukrainian towns, villages and cities, that he's responsible for the deaths of countless Ukrainian soldiers and the murders, killing of countless Ukrainian civilians. What's it like to see him have the red carpet be laid out in front of him by the American president?
Well, it felt like an offense, particularly in comparison to the meeting that Ukrainian president got by the leader of the free world a couple of months ago. And on a very personal note, I will say this. I was looking for at the press conference yesterday. Well, we were waiting for the press conference, which started a bit later than what was announced. And I was sitting there nervously in front of my computer and thinking, how is that possible? There are two guys that have nothing to do with Ukraine, that probably care very little about Ukraine, but they're over there talking about my future, about the future of my son, about the future of my partner who's been on the front lines from day one, about the future of millions of other Ukrainians, and they're deciding our fate. And that felt just very wrong. And least to say, slightly colonial as well. This was just a very wrong setup to begin with, I think, talking about Ukraine, or without any representative of Ukraine's interest whom we can trust. Because another thing that I keep in mind is that any direct meeting between Zelensky and Putin, it was announced, but then some Russians saying that it was not fully confirmed. But regardless, if it is to take place, it's going to be extremely emotionally difficult for President Zelensky. It's going to be extremely difficult to face a person who has killed thousands of your people. Maybe that is what Putin is hoping for. So on a very emotional level, this just feels wrong, and this feels like injustice being done to all of us.
Obviously, it's going to be a challenge, not a commensurate challenge, but it's going to be a significant challenge for your president at that meeting in Washington on Monday. You described yourself as being willfully optimistic in respect of the Putin-Trump meeting. What level of optimism do you have about the Trump-Zelensky meeting?
Well, I would say it's the same, but there are two voices speaking in my head, because on the one hand, the truth is that as any Ukrainian here, I very much want this war to end. So you irrationally hope for the miracle. But as of right now, what we have heard is the single message to the Ukrainians that the President Trump said after the summit. He said that now it's up for Zelensky to make a deal. And my question is this. So what changed now compared to yesterday? What sort of agreement they have come up with so that now Ukraine is in a position to make a deal? Because from our perspective, nothing really changed for us. There was there is nothing that makes the deal closer today compared to where it has been yesterday. So based on that, I want the miracle to happen, but I'm very realistic that most likely it will not.
Ina, thank you for your time. That's Ina Sovsun, Ukrainian MP. And Ina was making the point that these are two nations not directly involved in Ukraine, other than on one side militarily involved in Ukraine, deciding the fate. And her description was that it was in some way, it had shades of colonialism about it. It begs the question, what role of Europe in all of this? Sean Kelly is with us, Fine Gael MEP. Sean, Europe seems to be irrelevant in this, is it?
It's not irrelevant, but it has been sidelined by Donald Trump in this bilateral meeting he's had with Putin. And I would agree with the other two speakers that it's really a show by Donald Trump. He wants to get the Nobel Peace Prize. He hasn't any great regard, I think, for Ukraine. He sucks up to Putin. Putin sucks up to him. They're the two most powerful leaders probably in the world. So that if they come to some agreement, then it's more or less up to Ukraine to take it and not to be anonymous. That's the kind of impression you get, which is horrible. Because Russia invaded Ukraine, Europe are aware of what's happening. They also know that Russia is now more or less a military economy, building up their army, nothing else really matters. And particularly if you talk to the countries in the East, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland, they think that if Putin gets away with this, that he will continue and eventually invade one of those countries as well. So at the same time, I suppose you could give credit to Donald Trump that he is at least talking about peace rather than war, and he's looking at how it can be done. But it would be very interesting what he will have to say to European prime ministers, particularly next week.
Well, John Everard's analysis was that if he does want to make peace, the only way he does it is on the battlefield, because that's all that Vladimir Putin understands. If the US doesn't continue to commit arms, can the EU continue the fight, support the fight without them?
I think they'll have to. It will be difficult in the short term. Obviously, a lot of countries in Europe now are really trying to build up their arms supplies and also to support Ukraine as much as possible. But there is a dependency on the US at the moment. And if the US, for instance, with Donald Trump, threw a fit and said, listen, I did my best, you're not cooperating, I'm not going to cooperate with you, no more military support for the war, then that would make it extremely difficult in the short term. But long term, this is a serious issue, because if one country can invade another country, and the only way you can get peace is by the country that's being invaded conceding half its territory or so forth to the invader, and the invader gets off scot-free, that is not any way to do business, and it isn't obviously any way to guarantee peace and security either for Ukraine or for Europe into the future.
And do you think that the European Union, whether through presidency or parliament, should be being more vocal in this process? Because we're talking about a close European neighbour and an EU aspirant state. Should the voice be being made heard at the moment, or do you stand back and hope?
No, I think they're playing it sensibly at the moment. They are actually the mature people in the room. They're not escalating the matters. They're trying to convince Trump that nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine is the approach. And up until now, they have shown patience. They've shown understanding. Obviously, Donald Trump is very sensitive. He wouldn't like people particularly to be criticising him publicly. But I would say if push comes to shove and Trump insists that Ukraine accept terms which don't make any sense, then I think Europe will have to stand up and say, sorry, we're not going ahead with this. We're not accepting it. We're standing by Ukraine, full stop, and we have to try and get on without you.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.